a vote yes, Mr. Speaker, is a vote for more attorneys in an area where right now there is indeed an effort to keep the trappings of illegality to a minimum. But those trappings will certainly be gone. They will now be disappeared. And we are going to we'll go into an era where we have simply established another type of court system. Mr. Speaker, the comments by this representative from downtown are just exactly right. If the representative from Fairbanks is upset because somebody didn't prosecute in the area he described before, when there was no financial reason for the agency to hold back, just wait till there's a substantial financial reason for them to hold back, and the situation he described before will be even worse.
Representative Tischer?
I know, Mr. Speaker, but I just have to say this, that we were elected by constituents in our hometown to represent their interests, not big government. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
President Bettesworth?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As a response to the minority leader, if this does establish a new court system, that might be for the better. The one we've got sure as hell isn't any good.
Representative Locker?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have to just say one more thing. I know a little bit about a case in Fairbanks where a little boy was killed, and it was the babysitter that killed him, Mr. Speaker. And that child's case and his abuse, sexual abuse, if you will, had been brought before the proper authorities days and weeks in advance, Mr. Speaker. But because these authorities were short of help, they were unable to save that child's life. The trooper involved told me that he actually thought the child was safe because he had advised the father of the child that very probably it was the babysitter that had been sexually abusing that child, and that the father promised him that they would take the child out, or the babysitter, out of the home and not allow him to be around the child. The child was placed in a hospital for his abuse, and when I asked the trooper, when he found out 2 weeks later that the child was killed, how have we failed that child? And he hung his head and said, I had 75 cases on my desk. I thought for the time being the child was safe, and I had to go on to other things. That's what you're asking, Mr. Speaker. You pass legislation like this, and you're telling people that if you go out there and make an investigation and require a sort of hearing, you'd better be right, because it's going to come right out of your lunch money, right out of your budget, because we're not going to fund this. We just don't want you messing with these people. Leave them alone. And that's my concern. And the representative from Fairbanks was so good about telling you where we failed. I'm telling you again where we failed, because we failed to provide the money for the legislation that we passed and for the children that are out there that need this sort of supervision.
Question. Representative Ward.
Thank you, Ms. Speaker. I'm sure everybody want to know how I felt about the bill. I'm going to vote in support of the bill. And I wanted to explain something here, the comment from the minority leader. The attorney does get paid. Civil proceedings right now, if Department of Commerce and Economic Development, for one reason or another, would bring an administrative procedures against the minority leader, he would have to hire an attorney, regardless of the merits of it. He would then have to pay that attorney, whether he won or lost. He would have to take time out from his job. Of course, he would be immune during this session. But right after the session, he'd have to take time out from his other work to appear there. But regardless of whether there was ever any shred of truth to it whatsoever, the expense, and if he spent $17,000, $28,000, $47,000, $100 million, you know, he would have to pay every last penny of that himself. And that's the way the procedure is. And what this bill does, Mr. Speaker, it says something very clearly. And just to set the record straight, that attorney is going to get paid regardless. That is one thing I've discovered as far as lawsuits go. Attorneys do get paid, win, lose, or draw. But the reality is that if there's an unfounded suit brought against an individual, Mr. Speaker, then And if that suit is so proven in a court of law, then under the system that we have, then the burden should be upon the ones that's the losing party. And the way it is right now, what we're basically saying is we're saying that the responsibility of action should be placed upon those who are responsible for those actions. And that is simply it. This is not an attorney's retirement fund. What this is an allocation of where the responsibility should be, because the attorney is going to get paid anyway. Only answer is the question needs to be asked, do you want the citizens to have to pay for it even though they are not guilty in this particular case, although we can't identify a case because it hasn't come forth yet, or do you want the government to be responsible for its own actions? That's the question.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 588 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
26 yeas, 14 nays.
Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 588 has passed the House. Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Lacking 27 votes, move the effective date clause.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the House adopt the effective date clause for Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 588? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
35 yeas, 5 nays.
Effective date clause has been adopted. Representative Winty.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I give notice of reconsideration of my votes on House Bill 530 and House Bill 546.
Notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Winty for his vote on House Bill 530 and House Bill 546. Sir, are there any announcements to come before the body before a motion to recess until 1:30? Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent to outstanding recess to 1:30.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the House stands in recess until 1:30 p.m. At ease, we were working on the daily calendar in order to establish a quorum. Will members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to indicate their presence by voting? Will the clerk please take the roll?
35 members present.
During the recess, the clerk's office received messages from the other body and some reports of standing committees. Representative Barnes, would you move that we go back
Speaker.
Up the daily order of business?
Move and ask unanimous consent. We move back up the daily order of business to messages from the other body.
Will the clerk please read messages? Is there objection? Hearing none, will the clerk please read messages from the Senate?
The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to Senate Bill number 95. Thus, Senate Bill 95, effective date failed House, requiring that certain legislative officers file statements of financial interest, passed the Senate. The Senate has passed and returned committee substitute for House Joint Resolution number 19, Fish, United States Observers on Foreign Fishing Vessels. This has been sent to enrolling. The Senate failed to concur and House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill number 490, Rules, making supplemental appropriations effective date, and respectfully request the House to recede from their amendment to CS SB 490 Finance. In the event the House fails to recede, the President appointed a conference committee to meet with a like committee from the House to consider the bills, Senator Sackett, Chairman, Senator Ferguson, Senator Ziegler. The Senate has passed the following and it is transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 431, Hess, by the Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Purchase of Residential Child Care Services and Providing for an Effective Date.
Senate Bill 431 is referred to the Finance Committee.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of standing committees.
The Finance Committee has had Senate Bill number 51, establishing the Shiek Island State Park effective date under consideration, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 51, Finance, same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, concurred in by Adams, Bettesworth, Martin, Furness, Grusendorf, Duncan, Jaroff, Ward, and Fritz. Senate Bill 51 has no further referrals. The Labor and Commerce Committee has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 286, Labor and Commerce, an act relating to motor vehicle warranties under consideration, recommends it be replaced with House Committee substitute for committee substitute for Senate Bill 286, Labor and Commerce, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cowdery, Chairman, recommending do pass Kopanen, Ringstadt, Wente, and Furness, having no recommendation, Cowdery, Pestinger, and Ewling. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 286, Labor and Commerce, has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has had committee substitute for Senate Bill 435, Labor and Commerce, extending the termination date of the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers effective date under consideration, recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cowdery, Chairman, recommending do pass Cowdery, Pestinger, Kopanen, Ringstad, Wente, Ewling, and Furness. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 435, Labor and Commerce, has no further referrals. The Labor and Commerce Committee has had House Bill 457, making a special appropriation for the 1984 Iditarod sled dog race effective date under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 457, Labor and Commerce, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cowdery, Chairman, recommending do pass Cowdery, Pestinger, Kopanen, Ringstad, Wente, and Ewling. Not concurring, Mr. Furness has no recommendation. House Bill 457 was referred to the Finance Committee. I have no further standing committee reports, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us back to consideration of the daily calendar. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 626 by Liska, entitled An Act Relating to the Crime of Conspiracy. The Judiciary Committee has had House Bill 626 under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Bussell, Chairman, concurred in by Barnes, Hayes, Liska, and Bussell. The Finance Committee has had House Bill 626 under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Adams, Chairman, concurred in by Adams, Bettesworth, Martin, Furness, Lindauer, Grusendorf, Herbert, Ward, and Fritz. Now having no recommendation, Duncan and Jaroff. I have no committee substitutes, Mr. Speaker.
Clerk, have amendments?
No amendments.
Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 626 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Bill 626 by Liska, an act relating to the crime of conspiracy.
Is there debate?
Question.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Phillips?
Mr. Speaker, I've read the bill a couple of times and studied it last night, and I'm having difficulty grasping what it does. And if I can, through the prime sponsor, if you can give me an example or why such a piece of legislation was introduced, was it on behalf of the state troopers or the Anchorage PD or some other group? I'd like to know a little bit of background on why this legislation was introduced.
Representative Liska.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Under current law, state law, this state of Alaska has no law addressing the crime of conspiracy. A little bit of background. Under the federal system, they utilize what is known as the RICO system. What that stands for is Racketeering Influence Corrupt Organization. We can't utilize a system like that in a state because it's too broad a scope of an operation which pertains to drug trafficking operations, mobsters, mafia, and so forth throughout the entire United States. This particular piece of legislation would pertain to our state up here would be, for example, narcotic rings, prostitution rings, pornographic setups, where you would have over one person involved in it. It wouldn't go just after the person that was immediately at the helm of the operation. Anybody that was involved in this operation whatsoever, say they had an individual in, say, Spokane or Tampa, Florida, was involved in this, or anywhere else that was in. Through investigation, we find that that they were involved in this. They could be really unknown from the person that the original charge was filed against, but under investigation, we find, well, we got two or three, maybe half a dozen people. So this would be another arm that the Department of Law would have to go after these people that are involved in this. It's a conspiracy amongst several people. So under present law today, we have no such law that our department law can go after. So that, if there's any further questions, I'd be glad to answer what you have.
Representative Kulpinen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd need some more guidance here. I notice that the existing statute makes a solicitation, that is to participate in a crime, illegal. It's already in the statute. Conspiracy is added to that, but isn't getting somebody to participate and plan in a crime in the constitute solicitation? That is, if you're planning a crime and you're getting somebody to carry it out, such as drug traffic, isn't that already covered? If you're soliciting somebody to participate in a crime, I believe that's currently illegal.
Representative Liska?
Mr. Speaker, no, that is not covered under the present statute. Solicitation would be a misdemeanor crime in its own, other than what this particular piece of legislation addresses. To try to answer your question more fully than to explain it, to solicit under the we'll just take a hypothetical problem here could exist. Say we have a narcotic ring, for example, forming in a state. The Department of Law knows, and say the Anchorage Police Department, any department working on a case would also be involved in it. You couldn't take the solicitation part of it, like, for example, a prostitution setup, and try to crank it into something where you've got a crime ring set up. That's what we're addressing here, is to break up and actually organize an organization of crime. Solicitation could be anything from soliciting some kid to go out and steal a gun from somebody's house or something like that, that it wouldn't pertain to breaking up organized crime. I guess, you really couldn't crank it into it. It just doesn't fit. Not under this.
Representative Kulpinen?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yeah, I raised the question because I remember a case in the Fairbanks area where one of the radical groups, the Minutemen, had a falling out, and one leader hired someone to do away with another rival leader, and the gentleman who was hired took a tape recorder and recorded the conversations, and the troopers then arrested and convicted the gentleman who had been hiring the person. In other words, it was the planning of a crime, and what the person who was convicted of was the planning of the crime, and attempting to get someone else to participate in it. So I'm not clear in my own mind as to the difference, and I would request one of the attorneys in this house to clarify the question for me. And further, I noticed that on page 3, the felonies are not only covering controlled substances and alcoholic beverages, which I guess is organizing a bootleg ring, but against public order and against public administration. And I'm not quite sure of those two. I remember that we had the Great Alaska Trespass, which my predecessor in the House was one of the organizers of, which was certainly against public order. And I presume that under this, planning some such demonstration, such as the Great Alaska Trespass turned out to be, would be a conspiracy punishable as a felony under this. I'm wondering how broad we're making the definition of conspiracy here, and I would be guided by people who know the law more than I do.
Question. Are you ready for the question? Representative Pestinger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I have a lot of respect for my distinguished colleague from Fairbanks. Show a lot of wisdom on the floor. However, I think that I really want to compliment Representative Liska here on his good work. I remember when I was a federal prosecutor, conspiracy, the agreement to violate the law and the overt act that makes the conspiracy was one of the most helpful tools that the federal government has ever found to break up organized crime. And I think Representative from Eagle River did really an excellent job in distinguishing between solicitation and conspiracy, which is the agreement and the overt act. It's a very, very effective crime prevention tool, and you're entering into an area of prosecutorial and judicial discretion. And I speak strongly in favor of this bill, and I think that we should bring up our standards, the same standards that the federal government uses throughout the United States. It's just good crime prevention.
Representative Szymanski.
Mr. Speaker, I call the House.
There's a call on the House. I believe the call is now satisfied. No, there's not. No, there's still a member missing.
Speaker.
Representative Malone.
May we brief at ease, please?
House, please stand at ease. Come back to order.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I lift my call in the House.
Call has been lifted. Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill 626 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Davis?
Yes to no.
Davis from yes to no. Clerk may take the roll.
31 yeas, 7 nays, 8 nays.
House Bill 626 has passed the House. Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill 692 by the Judiciary Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Attorney Fees. The Judiciary Committee has had House Bill 692 under consideration, recommends it do pass. For it was signed by Mr. Bussell, Chairman, concurred in by Barnes, Hayes, Liska, and Bussell. Representative Claxton signed do not pass. I have no amendments on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that House Bill 692 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
House Bill 692 by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to attorney fees.
Is there debate? Representative Clarkson?
I am having some matter duplicated. Could we have a brief at ease?
Possibly stand at ease. You have the floor.
Mr. Speaker, during the at ease, I had passed out a copy of the House Journal for February 15 of this year. There was a confusion because I hadn't put my name on it. I'm
Maybe they're making additional copies with my name on it. For those of you that might have gotten a copy that didn't have a name, I'm the one that passed it out. It's on its way around. Mr. Speaker, rather than asking for another at ease, I'll go ahead and speak while they're passing it out. This vote, Mr. Speaker, was on House Bill 445, which is remarkably similar to House Bill 692, which is before us. The vote record is here to remind you that there were only 17 votes in favor of that bill when it was before us last time. And I'm not going to take a lot of time to repeat all of the arguments I made there. Suffice to say that the effect of the legislation will be to discourage the citizens of Alaska from seeking redress through the courts for what they perceive to be broad public issues, because they will be afraid that they will be imposed upon them attorney's fees that are not now imposed on them. Mr. Speaker, for those that are questioning whether or not they ought to vote the same as they did on House Bill 445, I'd like to note there is only one difference between the two bills. And that one difference makes the bill that's before you now even worse than the prior bill. If you'll look at 692, page 1, line 11, it says that you can award attorney's fees in a public interest case to a prevailing party, period. The comparable language in the bill that was defeated by this body in February says that you can award attorney's fees to a prevailing party that is a non-governmental entity. Now, the effect of that change is that attorney's fees can be charged against a citizen who sues the government. And that was not possible under the other bill. You'll recall I drew that distinction. Under the other bill, the problem would have been suits against private industries where there was damage to them and where the suit was unsuccessful. And therefore, the question is whether the attorney's fees ought to be paid. This bill is even worse because this is where a citizen takes on the government on a public interest case where the public interest is involved. And I remind you again that in neither case are we talking about frivolous cases, because frivolous cases are already out. You're already going to have to pay the attorney's fees if you file a frivolous case. So we're not talking about those cases. We're talking about where a citizen or a group of citizens sues the government because they think the public interest is being abused by the government. And if they lose, the government can require them to pay attorney's fees even though they were seeking the public interest. Mr. Speaker, the bill is worse than the bill in February, and I encourage members to also vote no as they did last time.
Representative Winty.
Question of the previous speaker, Mr. Speaker. We heard a great deal this morning about the little guy fighting big bad government. Can we interpret the remarks this morning to also apply to this bill, at least in the eyes of the representative from downtown Anchorage? Because it would seem to me that in the same situation where we're talking about paying legal fees and having those being reimbursed, that would apply for this, where the little guy is fighting state government as well.
Representative Liska.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know. It seemed to me like people are reading things into this bill that I don't see. On line 10, it says it is not an abuse of discretion of the court. Now, maybe I'm missing something here, but I just can't imagine a judge making a decision that's not a public interest law in the public interest against the state of Alaska or the U.S. government, as far as that goes. So maybe there's something in here I'm missing. If somebody can explain that to me. It's not an abuse of discretion for the court. And that's all we're trying to do here is to, if it is a public interest, it's going to go down the tube anyway. I mean, he will just not award any attorney fee for them.
Representative Clarkson.
Let me try to explain that. The present rule is that if you sue the government and you lose, but your case is not frivolous and it raises a serious public interest issue, the judge may not force you to pay attorney's fees to the government. That's the existing rule. This will reverse that rule by giving the judge the power in that circumstance to order you to pay attorney's fees to the government. I think that's a bad public policy because it will discourage citizens from going to court to seek remedies on public issues.
Representative Bushell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think there was some truth in his remarks, or the last speaker's remarks, finally. It gives the judge the discretion to decide that, and the judge only that discretion. It does not mandate that those attorney fees be awarded. It does give the judge a little more latitude than he now possesses. And as long as I'm up, Mr. Speaker, I'd like to point out to the body that the representative downtown Anchorage passed out the copy of February 15th, House Journal, page 2610. And I'd like to point out to the members that if they'll page back in the journal to February 9th, which is page 2520, they'll find the first time in this body that this measure was voted on. And they'll find the same members of this body voting on it there, and they'll find 2215 voting to pass that amendment. And if you, with two excused and one absent, the one he passed out has got 17. Am I disturbing either of you two?
No, go right ahead. Yeah,
you have the floor, Representative Bushell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You'll find 27 yeas, 21 nays, one excused and one absent. I believe that was the day you yourself were off the floor, Mr. Speaker. This piece of legislation is essentially the same as that, with the changes necessary to make it a legal bill before the body again. It was a good bill on the 9th of February. It's a good bill today on the 4th of March, and I'd urge the body to support the measure. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Gall.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. I would like to make one stab at criticizing this bill. First of all, the only cases to which this would apply are cases that are clearly public interest cases. This would not apply to private gripes between citizens and the government, but only to public interest cases. And a public interest case is a case in which the outcome will affect public policy, in which many people, that is citizens, will benefit, where a private party only could be expected to file the case, and where the plaintiff has no economic interest in the outcome. That's a pretty strict bunch of rules there, and basically they add up to be saying that the person bringing the suit is not going to benefit, but the public may benefit. When such a case is decided against the plaintiff, when the person who brings the case loses, there's no rule that can't be broken. The courts have decided themselves that they do not wish to have judges of the lower court assess these attorney's fees. It's a court rule. The courts have made the decision that it's an abuse of their own discretion in a case where the plaintiff could not benefit at all and the public could, to charge that benefit, the attorney's fees, that the state may have developed in defending its position. For us to overturn that court rule, first of all, does tend to violate the separation of powers, as was brought out last time. If the courts feel that this is the way it should be and we make a law to overturn them, we should have some very significant reasons, and I don't think those have been brought forward. And there's no question in my mind, and there was no question in the minds of the body last year or earlier this year, that this would stifle many, many public interest groups with legitimate concerns from raising their cases simply because they don't have enough money to take this risk. This is the exact opposite kind of situation from the one that was brought forward earlier today in an attempt to protect the public. This is one that basically will stifle the ability of the public to take action against the government unless that member of the public is very rich personally. And I think it would be very good public policy for us to put this aside once again.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I don't know if people have changed their minds about the legislation, but there's one point I wanted to raise that I guess applied to the earlier bill that was discussed, certainly applies to this one. There's some belief that adoption of this kind of legislation would result in reduction of lawsuits by organizations that have fairly narrow purposes. I disagree with that contention. I'll use a much maligned example is probably the Sierra Club. They have the capability of raising a lot of money and can take on the risk of paying attorney's fees if they lose the suit. This is a large organization, national organization, that could raise literally millions of dollars. What this bill discriminates against is not organizations like the Sierra Club. What this bill discriminates against is the individual doesn't have any other resources except the fact that he or she is right. Those are the people against whom this bill discriminates, and that's why I'd urge people not to adopt it. It's not going to stop the organizations from filing lawsuits. A lot of cases, they have more money to file or to pay lawsuits than private companies do. Private companies might have more cash flow, but they certainly have less they can devote to litigation than some of these organizations. It's going to infringe on the ability and to some extent the responsibility of individual Alaskans when they see something wrong with the way government or someone else is doing things, is to bring that case to court and petition for a change. And if they bring it to court and lose it under this, they're going to be in the position of having to pay attorney's fees. And I think that does prevent people from make them less likely to bring a public interest lawsuit. Doesn't happen very often that individuals bring these lawsuits, but it'll happen a lot less frequently under this legislation.
Representative Lindar.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. I'd like to rise in opposition to this bill. Tell the members why. On one hand, I know that many members have found examples and good examples where there has been a misuse, where there should have been an award, perhaps, or a good case could be made. But this would, I think, have a chilling effect, and not just on the kind of institutions that an individual member might not like. Let me give you some examples of the kind of thing that may motivate some of the members here. This would tend to chill a suit brought by a sports fishing group or a group of trollers on matters regarding the opening of fisheries. This could affect the Resource Development Council as it tried to promote the development of resources. Susitna Now, a group that's in favor of the dams, could just as easily be affected by this as an environmental group which is opposed to the dams. The Republican Party or individual members have recently brought suits regarding reapportionment, and an individual member of the Democratic Party brought the first suit. They'd all be liable under this, I believe. We've got a railroad transfer going, which is subject to the possibility of litigation regarding the public interest by both members of the railroad unions and possibly the Teamsters and possibly various and sundry public interest groups. When we think in terms of a group, we shouldn't think of a narrow group that is somehow opposed to us, somehow we're getting to. There are all kinds of groups in a society as complex as ours, and there are all kinds of public interests, and there are all kinds of interests that are conflicting, and today's friends are tomorrow's enemies, and so forth and so on. You may be aiming at one group, and you may hit your friends right between the eyes. We have to go very careful before we put a chill on the ability of individuals to come to the courts to seek redress in the public interest. Thank you.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall House Bill 692 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
17 yeas, 22 nays.
House Bill 692 has failed to pass the House. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar? Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I'd like to bring up my reconsideration of House Bill 663, dealing with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, at this time.
Will the clerk please read the bill?
Committee substitute for House Bill 663, Finance, amended by the Finance Committee. An act relating to certain state housing loan programs and providing for an effective date.
Clerk does have an amendment. Amendment number 3. Will the clerk please read the amendment?
Amendment number 3 by Malone. Page 6, line 5. It begins with delete lines 5 through 14 and it has been duplicated and placed on your desk.
Representative Malone.
Speaker, I don't want to confuse people procedurally. That amendment was read by the clerk. Amendment number 3 is an alternative, but what I wish to do first was to make a motion to return to second reading for the purposes of adopting previously failed amendment number 2. I'd like to make that motion. Move and ask unanimous consent.
The motion is to return to second reading to rescind our action and failing to adopt amendment number 2.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
There is objection. Let me ask the clerk to read amendment number 2.
Amendment number 2 by Malone, page 6, lines 3 through 14, delete section 6.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, this amendment, of course, deals with a new definition of what is a rural community. Page 6 of House Bill 663, the addition we considered in the House. And in that definition, it has three different parts. One type of community is a community in the first or second judicial district with a population of 4,500 or less. A second type is a population in the third judicial district with a population of 4,500 or less that's more than 100 nautical miles from the conforming boundary of the jurisdiction of the municipality of Anchorage. The third type is a community with a population, same numbers, more than 35 nautical miles from the conforming boundary of the jurisdiction of the city of Fairbanks. And I'd argue for the motion on the grounds that we've got a really complicated definition of rural that would be enacted by this legislation if adopted. In trying to figure out what communities were affected which way by the language in Committee Substitute for House Bill 663, Finance, people will find attached to Amendment Number 3, the amendment that's not before us yet, a map that was is at least my attempt to try to figure out where 100 nautical miles from the municipality, which I take to be the borough, original borough boundaries, at least, of Anchorage, fall in the south central part of the state. And I'm not going to vouch 100% for the accuracy of it, but I think it's approximately right, at least to give you an idea on the major communities. And as I suspected, Tyonek, for example, under the present law, it's considered rural. Under the new law, if it was adopted, would be an urban area. Seldovia would remain the same under either definition. Kenai would. Cordova, I'm not sure, but I believe it would be urban under the new definition. And I'm not sure all this makes a great deal of difference because we can use whatever definition we want to. It's just that I'm not sure that people haven't understand the impact of what the change in the law would be. As near as I can figure, for example, whether or not it's the intent that Glen Allen would be a rural community, it would be an urban one as far as I can figure under this definition. Now, it might stand to be corrected by better information, but it's the best I could figure out. So what I'm proposing is we just keep the definition we have right now, which is if it's on the road system, and it's less than if it's not on the road system and it's more than 4,500 people, it's rural, and if it is on the road system, it's not rural. on the road system connected to Anchorage or Fairbanks. And I think people can understand what that definition means, and we've been working with it. I know that that particular definition has caused some problems in some areas for people that maybe not have access to the same amount of funds as others, but I'd submit that this definition is going to cause the same problem for other people. And so I think it's easier to keep what we've got and look at other amendments later down the line. So I'd urge the adoption of the motion.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On the amendment, in the map that was placed before you, if many of you on the Glen Highway, if you'll recall where Gunsight Mountain in Eureka is located, that's just about the line as to where 100 nautical miles would be from the. So it's back about where that original drawing that you see in there. That's just about the exact 100-mile radius from the boundaries of the municipality of Anchorage. So that's quite exaggerated on this map here. And I know that this has been before the legislature before in trying to come up with a definition of rural, and it's very difficult. With the possible exclusion of a community that was mentioned, Tionic, but it would also include in the definition of the word rural many of the communities that are along the Parks Highway that are presently considered urban. So there's probably is some discrepancies within the thing, and I'm not. And I've worked very closely with Senator Ferguson on this and in Senator Sackett's office in trying to come up with something that the communities could live with. This would allow a lot more communities that are actually rural to come under the definition of the word rural. And at the same time, it may exclude a community like Tionic from it. But we're looking at maybe 40-some communities that will be included in the definition of the word rural.
Representative Miller.
Could I just inquire why we use nautical miles in the definition, and what's the sponsor's definition of a nautical mile?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm sorry. It's my understanding that this is just the terminology that is used for determining the distance, and it's the easiest way to do it. Now, that's what the department's told us, and Community and Regional Affairs.
Nautical mile equals 1.15 statute miles. Representative Miller?
Yeah, I was at this point to say, Mr. Speaker, that's exactly what it does. It's one degree of arc on the on the globe, which makes it difficult for anybody, you know, other than somebody that's either a sailor or a flyer to figure out, you know, how far we've been talking about. I think statute miles would have been far better, although I agree with the sponsor of the amendment that better to go the direction he says.
Representative Locker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. In order to put this amendment in its proper perspective, perhaps you would allow me to ask a question or two from the chairman of Special Committee on Loans. I don't know how many people here realize that when you're talking about rural funding, you are usually talking about specific benefits that accrue to people who are able to purchase their homes or build their homes, and many of them are dollars and cents. And I think when we're talking about nautical miles and actual miles and whether you're urban or whether you're not, someone should tell this group exactly what it means in dollars and cents, and that hasn't been brought out yet.
Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess I don't quite understand the question from the representative from the Matsu. Are you talking about dollars and cents, about how much money is being appropriated through Community and Regional Affairs?
And also the benefits that would accrue through lower interest and closing costs. In the past, there have been some special rural funds where you got a little better rate of interest, and sometimes the amount of the loan was different than it would be if it went through Alaska Housing Finance. Is that also true of these funds?
Well, that is correct. the Community Regional Affairs operates separately from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, and it is essentially only for areas in the state where you do not have a situation where it's an urban area. It is mainly for the rural areas, so it is not for the benefit, as it was brought out from the representative from Kodiak, basically for cities like Kodiak and Anchorage, Fairbanks. Basically, Community Regional Affairs is essentially for the rural areas of Alaska, the areas that are not the large urban centers.
Representative Locker?
Again, is there a benefit as far as interest and closing costs and maybe requirements for the building?
It's my understanding that there would be some kind of a benefit, yes.
Representative Furness?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There seemed to be, again, some misunderstanding as to the intent of changing the definition of rural. Mr. Speaker, the intent here is to provide adequate housing to persons within this state who in the past have not been able to receive that housing for any number of reasons. The most obvious is there is no commercial bank in that community, therefore a bank chose not to go to a more remote area. I note on this map there are some communities here that somewhat jump out at me. Paxton, for example, Delta Junction, Kentwell, Mount McKinley area, Heatley, Anderson, Nanana. These are the kinds of communities, Mr. Speaker, that in the past has had a great deal of difficulty in finding institutions to come in their communities and loan to build new homes. The chairman from the Special Committee on Loans is correct. Under the Community and Regional Affairs Program, they do have housing monies. And what we're simply trying to do is to expand that program to give these communities an opportunity that all other communities within the state currently has, and that is to increase and improve upon their housing stock. There's no other ulterior motive in this, Mr. Speaker.
President Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to point out there was a question from person from Matt Sue. To my knowledge, on any of the loans, there's no difference in the interest rates, and there's no difference in the closing costs or anything else. They're all the same, whether they're urban or whether they're rural.
Representative Copeland.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaking to the amendment, but also other matters that have been brought up. The current language, which was not added in Loans Committee, but subsequently does say nautical miles rather than statute miles. The usual way of referring to distances in law is statute miles, why they're called statute miles. And as you pointed out, Mr. Speaker, a nautical mile is approximately 15% longer than a statute mile. Also, the definition says from the boundaries of the municipality. In other words, it's not a simple circle from downtown, but let us say from Chugiak Eagle River boundary near to Matsu Borough boundary from which you would draw that. So not only would you have a rough circle, but it would actually be an expansion of the boundaries of Anchorage Borough, and it would, in essence, not meet much of the intent but would exclude Glen Allen and many of the other areas. In other words, I think the amendment that was added in the other committee is in error, and I would have preferred to have seen the Loans Committee. Of course, that's pride of authorship, I suppose, by the members of the committee. The loans in question are loans by the state, not by an agency of the state, Community and Regional Affairs, and they are non-conforming loans. And they are of interest to people in other areas of the state rather than other than municipalities which have strict zoning and building regulations such as the municipality of Anchorage had. By definition, anything built on permafrost is non-conforming. Any building that is built on pilings is non-conforming. Essentially, conforming loans, the kind that Housing Finance Corporation handle, are many of the kinds of loans that would originally have been FHA type of loans, which is not a resource that is that available. So that, and 20% of the non-conforming loans are available to urban areas. This would be an attempt to make it more available, because urban areas currently are defined as those areas joined by the road network plus any communities of 4,500 or more in the other areas of the state. And the committee did struggle with this question and come up with, in another piece of legislation, with various alternatives, which I believe were not accepted in the other house. Anyway, they died someplace. And I commend the author of this amendment with his effort, but I'm afraid that with nautical miles and withdrawing the definition as being from the boundaries of the municipality rather than the core of the municipality, has managed to exclude much of the area that was intended to be included. So I would urge to return to second reading.
Representative Wente.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think to some extent the previous speaker just hinted at it. I would remind the body that we are aware of the fact that we have underfunded the non-conforming urban portion of the housing needs. I guess if it's the intent of the sponsor of the bill to expand the urban, the areas are including the urban areas, that's going to put even greater pressure on the non-conforming urban funding. Keeping in mind, we're not going to have funding for that beyond September. So I guess I'm a little at odds on why he wants to do that when there is sufficient funding in the rural area. That'll be one impact in terms of financial impact in this area, but that's the area he represents. He's going to get complaints, not me, so I guess I just raised that point. The other one, in terms of the representative from Chicken, the Special Committee on Loans took a great deal of time in that committee working out that definition with him, and it seemed to me that he was very comfortable with 50 miles. Now we seem to be turning, I don't know what's changed, because some of us bent over backwards to accommodate his needs in that committee, not only on this issue but many others, and I guess I don't see why now all that work is being thrown out by the support of the Finance Committee version, in which you rejected all the work that was done in the Loans Committee.
Representative Fuller?
Possibly stand at ease.
To return to second reading for the purpose of rescinding our action and failing to adopt Amendment Number 2. Representative Ewing.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just briefly, there was a question from the representative from the Mat-Su area. The answer to that question was, first of all, in regard to a break for community regional affairs as far as loans are concerned. It's about 0.5% under what our present AHFC levels are for our loans in the urban areas. So it's about 0.5% break better for the rural areas.
Are you ready for the question?
Question.
Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 663, amended, be returned from third to second reading for the purpose of rescinding our action and failing to adopt Amendment Number 2? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Clerk may take the roll.
14 yeas, 22 nays.
The House has failed to return the bill to second reading. Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I still think we have a problem with the new definition of rural in the bill. I think that the basic problem is, first of all, uncertainty. And I did have put another amendment on a clerk's desk to deal with that issue. I'm not going to move Amendment Number 3 this time or offer it right now, because I think it also creates some problems as far as the definition of rural goes. But I think this matter does need further attention as this legislation moves along.
Are you ready? Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 663, amended, pass the House on reconsideration? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote?
I do.
Representative Miller? Representative Miller from Nota, yes. Clerk may take the roll.
37 yeas, no nays.
Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 663, amended, has passed the House on reconsideration. Representative Barnes?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call vote on passage committee substitute for House Bill 663, Finance. Be considered the roll call vote on the effective date clause.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill number 705 by the Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled An Act Relating to the Real Estate Surety Fund. The Labor and Commerce Committee has had House Bill 705 under consideration and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Cowdery, Chairman, concurring Euling, Pessinger, Ringstad, Furness, and Cowdery. The Finance Committee has had House Bill 705 under consideration and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 705, Finance, and reports it back without recommendation. Bettisworth and Martin recommend do pass. Adams, Duncan, Jaroff, Hurlburt, Grusendorf, and Ward have no recommendation. Lindau are signed, pass if amended. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent to Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 705 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the Finance Committee substitute is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Does the clerk have amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Malone.
Speaker, I have an amendment for the bill I sent up to the clerk's desk. I've got copies for everyone, but I don't have numbers on the copy. I don't know if we have to go through that exercise making copies again, but I'd like to submit an amendment to the clerk. What?
Let's ask the pages to pass them out. Representative Bliska.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I at this time would like to serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on House Bill 692.
Notice of reconsideration has been given by Representative Bliska for his vote on House Bill 692.
We're still in the second reading, right?
Since we are in second reading, Representative Barnes, if you would move that your motion be withdrawn to advance from second to third reading.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent my previous motion be withdrawn.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. There is an amendment on the clerk's desk. Would the clerk please read amendment number one?
Amendment number one by Malone. Page 4, lines 6 through 10, delete section 6.
Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption amendment number one.
There is objection, Representative Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Speaker, I think people have copies of the amendment. It doesn't have a number on it, but it would be amendment number one. And the amendment would delete the sections, new section 6 of the bill that repeals and reenacts Alaska Statute 0888475B. Attached to copies of the amendment are copies of the current statute 888475B. And what the current statute provides is that the $50,000 liability is provided for in the law is the liability from the from the real estate fund for a particular occurrence, and if the claims come to more than that, well, that people get a pro rata share of their claim. So this bill as written, though, would limit the liability of the real estate surety fund to $10,000, down from a total of $50,000. And I think that we should have the higher limit in the law. It's been in there, and I think that reducing it is probably against the general interest of the public. And anybody that is aggrieved under the has a claim under it that is in excess of $10,000 would not have any chance of getting recovery from the fund, at least under the new bill, unless we adopt this amendment. So I'd urge the adoption amendment number one.
Representative Martin.
Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I think, Mr. Speaker, the intent is good, but the liability has now been extended to the salesperson. The limitation had to do on the surety bond itself, surety fund bond, and that the in each case, a person who is responsible can be charged up to that amount by the individual with the court case. I don't think there's any limitations on how much can be settled for once it goes to court. It's just a limitation now on the surety bond, and I'm sure the real estate man behind me can address that also.
Representative Locker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to state for the record that I may have what can be construed by some people as a possible conflict of interest. I own controlling interest in a company that deals almost exclusively with licensees. However, I am not requesting from the body that I have permission to abstain from the voting. It is my intention, if allowed, to vote and enter in the debate.
Further, Representative Furness.
Mr. Speaker, could we have a brief at ease? I need to check something here.
Ramona.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. During at ease, it's discovered that the bill fixes something that it's not broke, but the change in the bill does not reduce the liabilities fixed at $10,000 in another section of statutes. Therefore, I move and ask unanimous consent that amendment number one be withdrawn.
Is there objection? Hearing none, amendment number one is withdrawn. Does the clerk have further amendments?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent the committee substitute for House Bill 705, Finance, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Will the clerk please read the bill for the third time?
Committee substitute for House Bill 705, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the Real Estate Surety Fund.
Are you ready for the question? Question. Representative Kopanen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As you know, this fund was set up in 1976, and under the original format, it required court action. And during the 4 years that the fund was under this particular wording, there were only five successful awards of damages to individuals. Since that time, then the legislative audit, budget audit report recommended changing to this format, and the House did at that time adopt it. Many of you served in that House. Since that time, there were 40 approved claims in 4 years, 70 denied claims, 30 withdrawn claims, $10,000, $11,900 were paid in 1981, $62,612 in 1982, $67,000 in 1983, $10,000 so far in 1984. It does not appear that there has been an extravagant drain on the fund since that time. I think that also forcing the collection into the courts goes against the grain of much that we are trying to do here. We have passed in this 13th legislature much, quote, tough on crime, unquote, legislation. And the court calendars are crowded. We are now urging people to take a certain type of civil action, which seems to be very easily handled by the procedures that we have in place without taking it to court. I realize that the legal profession may profit by this, but I'm not attacking the lawyers as being the in favor of this. People in the real estate sales and development profession are widely split. I have had very vehement letters from people in the trade on both sides of this question, and I think I tend to agree with the ones who do not favor the current system. In fact, what this system does is change the surety fund from being a backstop that gives quick satisfaction to consumer claims of misrepresentation and other errors, to one that essentially provides an insurance policy, a publicly run, a publicly managed private insurance company for real estate brokers and sales personnel, with, of course, the greater advantage going to those who are either guilty of misrepresentation or errors of judgment, and not helping the others really at all. Because if a person is guilty of misrepresentation under this system, his fellow members of the real estate profession share the costs with him. It would be my feeling if that we force people into the courts to recover damages due to misrepresentation, that the person who should bear the brunt of that is not the other members of his profession, not the public, because we pay for the management of this fund, but the individual in themselves. There are only a small number of people in the profession who do create these problems, and to turn it into an insurance policy for them rather than into a safety net for the consumer seems to be going at the whole thing backwards.
Representative Bettesworth.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The previous comments were one version or one attitude towards how this surety fund works. The surety fund might be, well, it is just what it claims to be, is a surety fund available to a person who has a legitimate claim against a real estate transaction after all success to remedy his problems has failed with either the original salesman, the broker he was working under, or the office under which he is sponsored. Most claims are settled in that manner. The change when this fund was first set up in 1975 was correct. It was a court system that heard the complaints. There were very few. Then it was changed in 1980 to the current system, whereby the surety fund is, and complaints against it are heard by a hearing officer who is established as both judge and jury. And this is where people feel that they're not getting a fair deal, because people who have not found satisfaction or who have lost their case against a broker or a salesman go against the surety fund through a hearing officer. They have no responsibility or no liability to themselves. If they win the case, they're merely paid off. The hearing officers tend, and the argument has been made very successfully, that the hearing officers tend to pay all claimants because it is a fund that is set there for a purpose, doesn't seem to hurt anybody. Consequently, they make these payments. This is not fair to the people who have to maintain the fund. And I can see everybody's real interested in this argument.
Question?
So with that, I'm going to close and let us vote on the bill.
Representative Liska.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Maybe I can get a little bit more attention than my colleague from Fairbanks. I speak fully in favor of this particular piece of legislation. As a former member of the industry, I think I can speak with a little authority what has happened here. To have the surety fund set up, and any complaint that whether it could be rotted out door seal or whatever you want to put it, little old things that come up, little frivolous deals that could be handled between the agent and the buyer and the seller, what have you. So that's the way it had been. That's the way it was designed to work, so that they could work out the difficulties without having to fall upon the surety fund to pay for it. But apparently what's happened here in the past couple of years or so is that every time somebody gets a complaint, they say, well, we'll just go right straight to surety fund and pay for it, and have the surety fund pay for it. Well, here, what we got in the surety fund? The executive director of the Board of Realtors, I think that's the way it works, he calls a hearing. A hearing officer decides everything without ever getting the full facts of the case, and so they just vote on, okay, pay it out of surety fund. Well, really what it should be is left, the individual has a claim against the real estate agency or the real estate salesman or the broker, and resolve it by adjusting around earnest money agreements and things like this. So this is usually the way it's done, but it hasn't been working that way. And so what this piece of legislation does, if you have a claim against this brokerage, then let's take it to court and let a court of law decide whether or not you actually got a claim coming. And if they can't resolve it by negotiation, then that's where it goes, to court of law. So there'd probably be a lot less of them going to court of law, because they'll agree to settle without having to go to court. And so I don't agree with my colleague from Fairbanks on my left that they're going to clog the courts, because if the cases turn out, I think if it's proven in the court that it's your fault, take a chance on losing, you're not going to go in there and file a claim against it. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
President Rocker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I've had a lot of pressure from my district to vote yes on this legislation. As you know, the Mat-Su Borough has many, many realtors or real estate licensees. However, as I was studying the material that came to me with the legislation, it was brought to my attention that the Real Estate Commission did have a hearing, a public hearing, and it was on April 24th, Mr. Speaker, and I'd like to just read a little bit from that. It says, the Commission held a public meeting on April 24th in Anchorage. The meeting was scheduled from 2 to 5 p.m. and from 7 to 10. There were 20 to 40 people in attendance most of the time. We estimate 50 to 70 members of the public at least attended the meetings. It said that there were many more licensees than public. However, at the end of the meeting, the commission determined that those concerns are not adequately resolved by the current bills. And of course, the concerns they're talking about are the realtors' concerns. It was therefore the commission's decision that it does not support the passage of House Bill 705. It is the Commission's intention to have alternate legislative recommendations ready for the next session, and that this will be a high priority of the Commission. Mr. Speaker, many of the realtors in my district have been quite unhappy with the way the surety fund works. They seem to feel that they are guilty until they prove themselves innocent, and that over the most minor infractions, or what are perceived to be infractions, people go before the commission or threaten to go before the commission rather than trying to work it out with the realtor. I think they have some legitimate concerns, but I believe that this legislation, even though it may have some very good people behind it, has some problems. I would read to you that Connie Sipe testified at this meeting, and she's the Assistant Attorney General of Consumer Protection Division. And Mrs. Seip believes the Real Estate Commission, if they supported this House Bill 705, would be effectively retreating from the consumer's interest. I'm going to vote no against this legislation, even though many of my constituents are in favor of it. I'm going to vote no because I believe that it's not in the public interest to pass this legislation without more public hearings. To my knowledge, this is the only public hearing that was held. It was held in Anchorage, and I believe that that we can come up with better legislation, legislation that would protect consumers and also solve many of the problems of the real estate people.
Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I rise in support of the legislation. In response to the acknowledgement that the Commission has finally taken this issue under consideration, I'd like to add some additional information. During our Labor and Commerce hearings, we did speak to the Real Estate Commission. It was somewhat obvious that the Commission has been served with a white paper outlining the concern some time ago and has simply drug its feet and was almost forced into holding whatever hearings that they did hold. I make note also that the Commission did take a vote to not to support this piece of legislation, but that vote was not unanimous. As I recall, there were some 3 to 4 of those Commission members who disagreed with that vote and indeed does support this piece of legislation. Mr. Speaker, I think the prior person on this floor has indeed supported and spoke as to why we need this piece of legislation. But perhaps more importantly, we made a mistake in 1980, I believe, when we changed the law. And we've seen the statistics gradually increase to a point of what I would call an epidemic now going through the hearing officer process. It's not working. What we need to do is bring this back into what is normally called the due process. Let's bring it back through the judicial review process, and I think the public can better be served that way. Thank you,
Mr. Representative Martin.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I was chairman of the Labor and Commerce Committee when this issue came before the legislators in 1980. And then it was the realtors themselves which surprised me that were very strong and tried to alleviate a problem. And the major problem was is that they thought to go to court was very costly to the consumer and that the process was of such nature that it discouraged many of them to go. So an honest effort was tried by the realtors themselves. I don't recall the commission being so excited and having to adjudicate all these cases or potential cases, but the realtors were honestly trying to solve and expedite a matter that they felt could be done in a better way, and that was to allow the commission to hear the various cases at minimal cost to the consumer. And that was an honest effort on them themselves. They knew it may cost them more, but I thought it was fair, and the legislators thought it was fair and let it go by. Now we found out that it's not quite working as good as they thought it was. We're not worried about the money in the surety fund. That's a minor, if any, issue at all. The major issue right now is due process. And it's been found that a lot of commissioners, because they're standing there at the person of one individual cases, will find themselves confronted with law and interpretations of law that they are not really trained for at all, and they find themselves in a real uncomfortable position. However, there is some feeling that certain commissioners want to keep the powers of adjudicating these cases or issues. Now, luckily, this legislative body, and I'm sure the other one is going to do it too, has passed through a new maximum limit for cases, civil cases, to be heard in district courts. And that issue, along with this issue, is going to make it much easier for the average consumer to go to court to a local judge and have the issue solved. Whether, I think our limit's 50,000, but someone may correct me on that. In most cases, it's much more less than that. Then if they can go to the district judge in Palmer, the district judge in Nome, it'd be a lot better than having to previously go to Anchorage or Fairbanks to solve a financial issue that's under $50,000. And I think with the two taken together will certainly show that a positive for the consumer as well as the cost of litigation. And then also, as the Representative Muldoon said, due process, due protection, because there's no doubt that some of the commissioners find themselves in a real awkward position not knowing the law. And they feel, the one I talked to about 2 months ago, it would be better, they'd feel much better letting that in a local district court. Thank you.
Representative Phillips.
Speaker, I'd like to make a correction on one of the previous speakers. Facts. There are seven members on the commission, and on April 24th, two members of that commission were absent, and the commission voted not to support the present legislation with one dissenting vote. That motion passed 4-1 instead of the 3 or 4 who, as was stated before. Just want to state that as a fact.
Representative Walker.
Thank you, and I would like to read to you what the commissioner said that would lead me to believe that it is their intention to do something. Says Commissioner Collins further stated that the commission has a new direction to address after hearing the public testimony, but does not believe it is now the time to change the surety fund procedures. Says that Commissioner Serrano stated that he believes that the industry should look out for the consumer and that it is in good public relations to do so, and that he even... At the moment, he is opposed to the present legislation since there are no other alternatives at this time. He would like to leave the surety fund proceeding as it is. And they go on to say, Mr. Speaker, that it is their intention to contact the people who sent them the white paper and have them follow up and come before them. I would suggest, Mr. Speaker, that even though there are people behind this legislation, the fact that it was only introduced 22 days ago would lead me to believe that it does require additional public hearings.
President Malone.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I've got some questions on this legislation, and maybe somebody here can explain to me how it works. I don't know who wrote this bill, but the Section 2 of the legislation says that the person has to get a judgment. And if they get a judgment, then they can go and file an application in a court asking the court to direct payment out of the real estate surety fund up to the $10,000 that they can recover there. Okay. There's a number of qualifiers on that, one of which is that they couldn't get any money if the event was only innocent misrepresentation on the part of the real estate licensee. Now, I don't know what the burden of responsibility is on a salesperson or a broker to represent factual or provide factual data to a party, but it seems to me that part of the normal professional responsibility is being waived by that language on page 2, line 13 and 14. Innocent misrepresentation. I think they got a duty to discover and provide the facts to the people that are giving them their money. And so it's a question as to whether that's a change in the burden responsibilities of people in the business. But going on, Mr. Speaker, they got this judgment now, and the way I read the bill, now maybe I'm reading it wrong, then you go to a hearing on the application, you got the judgment, and then the applicant, who's already got this judgment from the court's got to go into the court and prove that they're not related or not the spouse of the judgment debtor, that they do have, in fact, a judgment, that they've tried to reach other assets of the debtor, and that they've either been unable to locate them or that they have located them, and there's not enough money there to satisfy the judgment, and that they've diligently pursued other remedies against the judgment debtor and anyone else who's liable in the transaction. Now, it seems to me we're putting quite a burden, even if this person gets a judgment, putting quite a burden against ever collecting any money, because they got to go, unless I'm reading this wrong, in for either a second hearing, extension of the hearing, and prove that there's no way in the world they can get money from any place else, from anybody that might be liable or who is liable in the transaction. After they go through that, they apparently under Section 4 of the legislation
have to comply with some other another requirement. They got to prove that the applicant's got to produce sufficient evidence that the cause of action against the licensee was for fraud, intentional misrepresentation, deceit, or conversion of trust funds, even if the licensee stipulated, had previously stipulated that they did something wrong, I guess, or consent or default, didn't show up at the hearing, the applicant has to go on and carry the burden of proof, not the person that's being accused. So we've transferred it almost into a sort of a criminal proceeding that the person, after they get the judgment, is got to go through a lot of hoops to ever get the court to reach Section 5, which is they might get some money from the fund to pay the claim. Now, maybe I'm reading the thing wrong, and maybe these sections 3 and 4 are not additional barriers to a person that, in fact, already has a judgment ever getting any money out of the fund. And I don't know the answer to the question about innocent misrepresentation, whether by putting that language into the law that we're relieving a real estate broker or salesperson of the responsibility to get the facts before they enter into a transaction. But it seems to me that this legislation is going to make it impossible, or as a practical matter, for anybody to get a claim settled from the fund. And maybe a simpler approach would be to just simply repeal the whole real estate surety fund idea, and let's use due process and regular civil proceedings and tort actions, whatever, to recover damages, which I think are there, and we don't need this legislation if what we're doing is making it impossible to gain money out of the fund.
Are you ready for the question? Question is, shall the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 705 pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Clerk may lock the roll. Do any members wish to change their vote? Representative Szymanski? Representative Szymanski from yes to no. Clerk may take the roll.
26 yeas, 12 nays.
The Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 705 has passed the House. Representative Barnes?
It doesn't have a...
Clerk, please read the next item on today's calendar.
House Bill number 709 by the Labor and Commerce Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Fees for Guided Tours Through Historical Sites and Providing for an Effective Date. The State Affairs Committee has had House Bill 709 under consideration, recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 709 State Affairs, and that it do pass. The report was signed by Mr. Abood, Chairman, concurred in by Abood, M.M. Miller, and Larson. Not concurring, Locker had no recommendation. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Move and ask unanimous consent that State Affairs Committee substitute for House Bill 709 be adopted in lieu of the original bill.
Is there objection? Hearing none, the State Affairs Committee substitute is adopted in lieu